From the European Broadcasting Union in Geneva, this is the Eurovision News Podcast.
Since last December's change in government, Poland's public broadcasting landscape has become once more subject to scrutiny and debate. The state's actions that were aimed at restoring journalistic integrity and independence, which were undermined by the previous government's reforms for strong political control, became headline news themselves. In this episode, we're joined by Wojciech Sigielski, head of news at Polish Radio. Together, we'll explore Polish public broadcasting, the challenges it faces, and the implication for journalism and democracy. Wojciech Sigielski, you're now head of news at Polish Radio after 20 years of working as a foreign correspondent. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Media in Poland is currently undergoing a monumental transformation. But before we delve into this, could you just give us a brief overview of the state of public broadcasting in Poland and the background to this story?
So the situation of Polish media in 2024 is complicated because of the past. Let me do a short timeline for you. In 1989, the communism in Poland has collapsed. During the communist time, there was just Polish radio and Polish television. But of course, we have changed, and there is a new Polish radio and the new public TV since 1989. The complexity of the situation is also because after the collapse of communism, those days, government has decided that they will split a radio from the TV based on communism time experience. So they made two companies, but what is right now for some part uncomfortable, that they've split the regional Polish stations from the main radio station, from the main Warsaw station. So right now we have basically three entities. One is the Polish TVP, Polish television. The second one is Polish radio, the countrywide with its four main channels and many internet channels. And the third entities is the 17 local Polish public radio stations. It's complicated, but the way that we cooperate with the journalists throughout Poland is much more complicated and different. And that's why having a biggest potential from all of the media outlets, we are not able to use it as much as we could. But it's the sin of 89, which we are not able right now to omit in any way, to be efficient as we would like to. And also what's important is the year 2015, 2016. In 2015, Law and Justice Party, the conservative one, has won the elections, both the presidential and the parliamentary elections. So they had the majority both in parliament and they had their own president. In 2016, just a couple of months after the elections, they undertook the major changes in the Polish media. They've removed all of the CEOs and 50% of the journalists and put the new ones here in Polish radio, also in the Polish television. And that is the beginning of the process of transforming Polish media into very much conservative agenda, concentrated media with, I might say also a propaganda one, which was in place until 2023. On 15th of October, the center-left coalition has won the elections. And on 20th of December 2023, so 4 months before we recording this podcast, they replaced the CEO of the Polish public media, both radio and TV, with the new guys, with the people, former journalists. So right now, at the heart of the TVP and the heart of the Polish radio are the guys who are a former journalist. The problem was that there was a change of CEOs and of the editors-in-chief, both in Polish radio and Polish TV, every time the government has changed in Poland. And they were more or less connected to politicians. So every next government brought us a new CEOs and new editor-in-chief. And the process of sinking into this political kind of a chaos in the public media was taking place deeper and deeper. And during the Law and Justice Party, the conservative government, the previous government, the destruction went so far that right now we are, well, for our luck also, we are starting a new life. Because the state of the Polish radio and state of the Polish TV were so bad that for our luck, we are able to start from scratch, which is also a challenge.
Now, as a media professional, as a journalist, this must have certainly been a time of uncertainty for you all at your office. Please tell us what the situation was like for you and your colleagues as this was unfolding.
Well, the political debate and emotions which surrounded all of this process made us much less comfortable in the process of changes. And because I still had some time from the moment I agreed to be the CEO of the newsroom to the day there will be a change of CEO in the radio, we didn't know when it will be because of the complex legal situation. So my first thought was, okay, so my first message to my team, which I knew very well because I was working here for 20 years, was, okay, we have to calm down the situation. It was pretty tense before the elections. The previous government and the previous media owners and editors were very keen on making a really very high temperature on the political debate. And the effect had been visible for all of my team. So my first message after they've announced that I'll be heading the newsroom was, okay, guys, so right now we have to calm down. That's the first thing. We have to remember there will be no changes here for you except one change. There won't be any political message being sent through the channels of public media. We are independent. So don't be afraid of any politician who might call, who might say something. You are a journalist and you know what to do. So don't be afraid. I had some kind of promise from my CEOs that even if there will be some politicians who will try to call me and say, look, I'd like you to do this and this, you can say no. I'm a journalist, I'm an editor-in-chief, and it's my duty and my responsibility to create the new media, and any politician would have any influence on that. So this was the first message I conveyed to my team in the first hour after the announcement of myself being appointed as a head of the newsroom.
What a historical moment for your organization.
Yeah, it was. It really was. And you know what? I felt it with my colleagues who were also being prepared for the different appointments, because the group of us who was waiting to be appointed for some days, of course. But we felt this is not like other changes of government in Poland. Because in Poland, every time the government has changed, there was a change of CEOs and of the editors in the Polish radio and Polish public TV. But it was something normal for us as we grew up in a Polish environment. But we felt that there is a moment like any other, because politicians have promised us, we won't be messing up with you guys. So there is a historical chance that for the first time since 90 or 89, there is a chance to create free and independent media. And you know, I am the man of the field. I was in Afghanistan, I was in Iraq. I hated to do the office work, really. I hated to do it. I preferred to be among Afghans, among Iraqis, among Israelis, Palestinians, to take the mic and go to the crowd and tell the story of these people, not to sit in the office from 8 to 4 or whatever kind of working hours there is. So I promised myself I would never go to some office hours. Right now I am in the office hours. And you know why? Because I thought, okay, this is one and only chance to do something for years. However pathetic it might sound, this was one of the factors that I agreed. However tough it is right now, but there is no other change of CEOs and the editors in the Polish media like today.
Was there any story or broadcast that you can remember following the statement that you gave your staff that said to you, now I have editorial freedom, or this is the journalistic independence we've been looking for? Is there anything that stands out to you that now things have really changed?
I guess plenty of that. First of all, it's good to know that there is still very heated political debate in Poland. So usually after the change of the government, the editors would be afraid of voicing the opposition on air. If there is some political debate on public media as well, but also on the abortion, on the LGBT, there were a couple of stories in Poland. Mm-hmm. So usually the editors would be much more pressured to voice rather the government than the opposition, but we did both, and I might say we've done a balanced thing, I guess. Usually you could skip the opposition. Some way not to go to the battle with the government. But we did it. And I said to my team, please cover it. The opposition, which was at the power, which was our CEOs as well, just a month earlier. But I said, no, cover it. Cover the government, but cover the opposition, just like any normal journalist would do, without any fear of being fired, without any fear of politicians talking on the phone with us. And also we've been doing some series of stories on the poverty in Poland.
So that I can understand better, the censorship mostly took the form of phone calls that would come to your office and politicians directly contacting you, leaning in, saying, hey, we're not happy with this report? Or how did it manifest specifically?
There were different paths. The classical one, the editor has called you and said, look, we are not airing this story. For example, there was a story of some teachers' strike in Poland. I don't remember exactly, but it was 2017, maybe 2018, something like this. And in Polish radio, like in the many, many other outlets, the morning prime time is also a time when we broadcast the news on what would happen during the day. So there was a huge manifestation in Warsaw coming on this day, with thousands of teachers supposed to come to Warsaw to protest. I guess it was on the financial reasons. And usually it would be normal that in our morning news services, it would consist a story of teachers' strike who is taking place later this day in Warsaw. So those days, editor-in-chief just canceled it. Just said, no, we are not airing it because the teachers are wrong. That's it. There is a one path. But the second one was much more complicated. Let's imagine there is some political debate on the story X. And of course, like in Poland, but many other countries, you need many comments from politicians of the different spectrum. So the thing is that you might manipulate it, presenting and airing 5 comments from the government side and 1 comment from the opposition side. That's also a kind of a censorship. Also, there was one of the previous editors, and it was a kind of an urban legend, but she really was saying this literally. Because we are a news service, so we are not airing comments, we are airing facts. We are talking about the facts. So what the government is saying is the fact. What the opposition, those days, opposition is saying is the comment. So we are not covering comments. There was a second path. And the third path was self-censorship of journalists. So if anybody knew that it might harm him or she in some way because the topic is not very comfortable for the government, we were not doing it. And that's it.
Understood. This reform of the media hasn't gone without scrutiny. Some civil society groups and independent media outlets have expressed some concern, mostly about the legal loophole that was used to bring about the reform. Do you have any comment on that?
Yes. Of course, it was not very obvious, and it was not very, very clear. And of course, the situation, the legal situation is complicated. Politicians from the government are saying that it's very complicated, but they were not able to do it in any other way. Right now, I guess nobody would say that they did these changes in a very fair or a very smooth way. But they are saying there was no other way, there was no other choice. I don't want to comment on that, especially being in this position. I am appointed by politicians, whether I like it or not. But yeah, it has to be said that it was very complicated. Right now, from the 9th of April, all of the CEOs are being confirmed by the court. So it gives us some comfort that at least we are not be involved further in this political fight.
Now, how about your audience? How has their perception of public media changed since the reform?
Well, frankly, I must say that some of our listeners have gone. So our rates are lower than they were 4 months ago. Because some of our audience was the conservative, politically engaged audience, which expected us to convey political messages from conservative sides. We won't be doing it anymore. We won't be conveying any kind of political message because we want to do our job. And our job is not to convey any message, just to give the audience the real-time perspective, the image of how the situation is in terms of politics, in terms of society, culture, whatever it is. So it's a natural way that we still need more time to gain a trust of public audience, a trust that we've lost during the last couple of years because of the content that we were presenting on air. And we are aware that it would take time. So the thing is that we've lost some of the audience right now and we are losing them constantly. But at some time within the next weeks, I guess, we will be gaining the new audience. I know that we are gaining a new audience right now, but it's a process. And in terms of the numbers, I hope that it will be visible during the last couple of weeks. So, for example, some of the conservative part of the society is also conveying the message of the conservative Law and Justice Party, which says that we are not legal. We, in terms of the new CEOs of the radio and of the TV, they move to other conservative outlets which are presenting the conservative agenda. And again, this is not our task to do, to present anyone's agenda. So yeah, the situation is that we've lost some of the listeners. Some of them, our listeners and our audience from the 2010, 2015, came back to us. But because we are not coming back to what was in 2015, it's a whole new era in the media. So we don't want to come back to 2015. We don't want to do the same radio that we've been doing 9 years ago. We want to do something fresh, something new, something with the modern technology, something which is much more online-based than the traditional radio-based. So it still needs time. But I guess what our strength is that we have our own ideas. Every person who is right now in charge of Newsroom, some of the programs, or in charge of Polish radio as a whole, as a former journalist, former or present journalist, we know how to do it. We know how our radio from our dreams would sound like, would look like in the internet. And we really have a vision of how it would end at the end of the tunnel, at least at our stage.
Is there any legal safeguards that are being put in place to help safeguard against reverting back to what it was before?
Well, it's a perfect question. No, not yet. The parliament is working on a reform of media and the reform of the law in terms of public media. We are still hearing that it would take some time. I guess, but it is just my guess, that they want to extend it beyond the current president's term, because President Andrzej Duda, the conservative one, also from the Law and Justice Party, his term ends on August 25, so next year. And because of the election result in the current parliament, the current government doesn't have the power, the vote, to overcome the veto from the president. So my guess is that they would be working on this law, counting on the presidential elections next year to have the president from the liberal environment, because otherwise the conservative president would veto the law. So it's not very simple, because we are aware that, well, if they did it in 2016, they could do it again in 2025. But frankly, we have nothing to lose. And if we don't do it right now, so nobody would do it. Because otherwise, the shape of the Polish public media was so bad last year that we would be the one to reform it, or nobody would be, or they would just close this radio. So we have nothing to lose. We are like a suicide mission, but I do trust that we will survive, and we will build, not even rebuild, but we will build very strong and modern media who would be trustful, who would be worth listening, worth losing a time, or who would be worth following online and on FM, on the waves. And it will be very modern in terms of online oriented. And at some point, maybe next year, maybe later, it would be some kind of a barrier for politicians, which would say, do not mess with us, because you have no choice to succeed. Right now we are completely defenseless, but we are doing our best to go ahead.
Has being part of the EBU offered any significance during this time, or have they supported you in any way?
Yes, I was a foreign correspondent, and without EBU, I would not survive at this job being a correspondent. If there won't be any EBU help, I'm not sure if I would survive in the radio. And also, my knowledge on podcasting, on social media, on online, is 80% based on webinars which were taking place during the pandemic, thanks to EBU. I guess I used this time to train, to learn something new. I'm not gonna say that I'm a perfect editor-in-chief, but I will be much worse editor-in-chief if I would not be taking part in these countless webinars organized by EBU and EBU Academy during the pandemic.
What I'm hearing is that the EBU has been very instrumental in your digital transformation through its webinars and sessions offered online. That's very interesting to hear. Is there anything else that the EBU could support you?
Yeah. I will tell you a story from the last days. Recently, I was visiting BBC newsroom, and if our colleagues from the BBC are listening to this podcast, I would extend my gratitude as well, not only to EBU, because I thought, okay, let's learn from others' example, and who else than BBC would be the best example. Also on the issue of structure, I'm in charge of the newsroom, of online, of social media, of podcast, so it's a huge structure here. My visit to BBC and the feedback that they gave me, and it was a huge feedback, was also thanks to EBU, because I've sent a message through the EBU that we are a part of the team who is right now changing the Polish media, and I would love to visit BBC and talk to editors-in-chief. And I was talking to editors-in-chief in BBC, maybe because we are part of the same family. So what kind of better example could be to tell you guys, thank you. Otherwise, I would still be thinking of, okay, how to do the morning meetings in a modern way, not to copy the examples which were made in 2015, 2016, also 2010, etc. in our radio. The networking, which is possible through the EBU, is, I guess, even much more valuable than, and with all due respect to your work, than all the feed you gave us on the audio feed, on the video feed, which we use very much. And it also a great value. But this networking, I guess, is the most important value, also because, and we could talk about it for ages, But let's focus our attention for 20 seconds on the environment that we are working in. We are competing on YouTube, on Facebook, on Instagram with some self-made podcasters, and they have much bigger traffic than us, although they are not reliable. So we can say, oh, it's stupid. I don't want to compete. We have to compete in terms of fake news, in terms of stability and reliability of information. We will lose if we will not get together to compete. And this is when the EBU came.
Wojciech Sigielski, thank you so much for your time. And it's been fascinating to hear the courageous work that you're taking care of.
Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you would like to hear more, please consider subscribing, leaving a review, and telling a friend about us. This is Laurent Frat, producer of the podcast. The music was created by Mickey Curling, and Martin Lonisser took care of the sound. Thank you from all of us.